Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 562, Science Faction Pyramids and Fungus.
That is the most horrifying pyramid I have ever seen.
No, it was pyramids and fungus, not pyramids of fungus.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So they're next to each other. So, like, you go to Egypt for the pyramids, stay for the fungus.
Stay for the athlete's foot and yeast infections.
I imagine the climate and temperature are not conducive to fungus. I would argue you're probably pretty safe from funguses.
You know what? We're going to talk a lot about how climate has an effect on all of this when we get into it, Damien. So you're divining the future of this article as we speak.
Well, I am a prognosticator. I did cold readings. Are there any funguses in the room? Anybody? Anybody thinking of fungus?
And speaking of a proctologist, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damien Mercado. Damien, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. And as your proctologist, let me just say... That callous prostate, coming along nicely.
Yeah. You know, they say that the measure of a man is not only his bank account, but the calluses on his hands. And I say, not just his hands.
I like how, Bobby, as you become more successful, like, you're like, you keep it real. Like, you know, like a lot of people, like, as they get older and more successful, they still go to the same barber shop. Because you still go to me, the same parking lot proctologist.
Yeah.
You don't go, even though you now that you have good health care, you don't go to the fancy schmancy doctor.
No way. No, I prefer it the way you do it, out of a van, which is, by the way, not even yours.
I have to steal a van 3 hours in advance.
Oh, I just thought you picked up the U-Haul van, you know, for $25 an hour.
You think I got U-Haul money? I passed the savings from this exam onto you, big guy.
Oh, dear. And speaking of passing the savings on to our fans, Damien, I have an exciting announcement. I didn't even run this by you yet, but we have an exciting announcement for our fans.
So wait, I'm finding out at the same time as our fans?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Then the shock will be real.
So as things are finally opening up and as people who are 18 and up, you know, outside of special categories, are getting more and more vaccinations. And as we're getting to the point where those vaccinated people will then be fully vaccinated, we are currently making plans to resume our old show format, which brings back our weekly guest scientists, and to do everything in the same room once again, which will be greatly appreciated. Because while you guys can't see it because of the magic of editing, about three times a show, Damien's internet freezes, and then we just have to wait for it to come back around, and he finishes half a thought that he was in the middle of before he realized it froze. And so, like, if you're listening to the unedited version of this show, there's a lot of Damien going, yeah, Bobby, well, about that penis. And then that's it. That's it. And then I have to, like, splice it all
through. I think you're shitting on that joke, but I think that had timing.
But I have been working to get back to a studio space and talking with some other podcasters, et cetera, et cetera. Hope to have that up soon. And as that is getting built, I'm going to be reaching back out to our guest scientists to see who's available. Now, some of our guest scientists have made their way into the world. Dr. Ava is now back in Europe. I think that's a semi-permanent position. So, you know, we might miss out on some of them, but we're going to try and bring back the ones you know and love, as well as maybe even debut a few new guest scientists over the coming year.
Joe Rogan, Dr. Joe Rogan, who might be looking for a new platform to espouse his nuttiness.
Yeah, you're right. He doesn't have enough audience. That's his problem.
Yeah, I think he's trying to branch out. He's trying to improve his science cred. Maybe that's just it. We pitched to Joe Rogan, like, hey, we're going to get you in the science gym, bro. We're going to get you working out. You're going to know science like crazy, homie. Come on down to Science Factions. We got you in a science heavy bag.
I'm looking forward to that. It's not like this is happening next week or anything like that, but I am very, very excited that that is now possible. In talking to a lot of spaces that we can start utilizing as a studio and stuff, it seems like something that's eminently about to happen. And so very, very excited about that. Excited to bring back that old format. Excited to be back in the same room when we tape, Damien. That'll be another fun part about it.
What are some scientists that you got lined up? You don't have to say who the first scientist is, but maybe who... who are we leaning towards? Who can the audience look forward to?
It's hard to say. You know, obviously Bill, who's a big fan of mine, more so than yours, would be great first guest scientist. He's always fun to do. I mean, you can't go wrong with Dr. Troy. DT is always a great hit. Fans love him. Ladies love him. Scientists love him. That should be his motto. You know, who knows? We're going to reach out and see who's available and kind of set up a calendar like we used to. We used to have it planned out a couple months ahead of time, have everything set up, and just get back to doing it the right way, because coronavirus, we're seeing the tunnel ending, and we're popping out through that light, and we're really excited to get back to the world.
First one of us to sleep with Bill. That's the one he prefers. First one of us to lock that
you
down.
You are at such a disadvantage to this with your heat sensitivity, Damien. See, I'm going to pump the heat up in the room to 85. Bill's libido goes up with the heat. Meanwhile, you got to jet and go hang out by an AC unit somewhere.
Bullshit. I start disrobing. I take this up a notch.
Yeah, but even then, I pump the heat up past 95. You can't take your skin off. You're going to boil up. You're screwed.
You know what? Bill likes exercise. I'll start doing some cardio. I'll start moving around. I'll hey, Bill, you want to wrestle? As I'm disrobing, by the way. I'm already picturing how I'm
seductions. You've already lost Bill. See, you want to suggest the sport to Bill? You go hacky sack. You went too aggro, bro. You're out. No wonder I'm banging Bill. And you're sitting on the sidelines.
I'm doing a slack line. Imagine me just tying a slack line in the office, naked, dripping sweat while naked.
Let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Okay, article number one, who built the pyramids?
It was actually Bob Vila went back in time.
This old pyramid.
I mean, like, originally the pyramids weren't that impressive, but Bob Vila went back in time one day and made them into what they are. He really was kind of a foreman. He did a lot of the craft work himself.
Before, they were quadrilaterals. He was not going to stand for that.
They've been lost to time, but there's a lot of hieroglyphics about a dude in a flannel shirt explaining, how to do drywall.
So this article was inspired by a live science article that's around this week. You can go check it out. That, to be honest, does not really detail a new publication or discovery. Again, I don't usually like doing this. I've done like two of these in the last month. It's not usually what we do, but I think it's really important because it touches on a subject that gets brought up literally probably every third time I tell people that I just met that I'm an archaeologist, which is like, all right, what's up with the pyramids? Or like, there's some alien shit going on, right?
Or the Jews are aliens.
Yeah, yeah, or some anti-Semitic stuff. Yeah, that's true.
Without being anti-Semitic, intentionally. I mean, the common myth is that the Jews built the pyramids.
That's
what
in the Bible,
hears.
Right? Yeah, that's what the Bible claims. Yeah, so when you talk to people, usually your average layperson will either say, like, oh, it was enslaved Jewish people, because I read that in the Bible. So if you talk to people who read the Bible, they think it was enslaved Jewish people. If you talk to guys with crazy hair on the History Channel, they say it was aliens. If you talk to dudes with wizard posters on their wall, they'll say it was the Atlanteans leaving Atlantis after it crashed. And
I've also said it's Bob Vila, you dick.
That's true. If you talk to crazy hair people with wizard posters on their wall, then they say Bob Vila.
I also have a sweet wizard painting on my van, you piece of shit.
No, that's a different thing. That's just
which I
cool.
Get proctology exams out of.
You all is pissed as shit.
It's not even a good wizard.
I did it in magic marker.
You did it with a hammer and you just dented the side of the van in the vague shape of a wizard.
So, first off, let's take these one by one. Let's talk about the Bible story. First of all, the Great Pyramids of Giza. Not only are they way older than the Bible, they're way older than Jews. Like, the genetic evidence for the group that we call, you know, Jews or something, doesn't separate from the...
Are we taking Methuselah into account?
Like, they're not nearly that old, like maybe, 3,000 years old or something, maybe, not even that far, despite what the Bible says. In fact, many of the things, like the cities mentioned in the Bible didn't even get founded until like 800 BC, like, and I'm talking about the Old Testament here, didn't get founded until like 800 BC, so the Bible itself is like, 700-something BC at oldest. So Not only does Giza, which is 4,500 years old, not only does that outdate Jews and predate the Bible and Jews and all that kind of stuff, we know that they were not Jewish for a few reasons. One, we can tell Jews pretty easily in the archaeological record.
A lot of sarcasm, like sarcastic notes. Like their comedy scene is going to be pretty developed. A lot of discarded allergy prescriptions.
Some witty writing, good dialogue and repertoire. Well, what's funny is, like, it actually is something that I guess you wouldn't call a stereotype, just thing, but there's no pig bones in Jewish settlements for obvious reasons. And so, like, that's one way we can tell them. We can tell them from the writing style. We can tell them from the culture and stuff. And we have actually found the area where the builders of the pyramids worked, and they are not Jewish. The writing is not Jewish. The culture is not Jewish. There's pig bones in there. Again, it predates, here's the biggest one, it predates the existence of Jews by 1,500 years. It would be like being like, we found something in Western Europe and it's dated at like 400 AD. And it's got this reddish shape. And we actually think it's an emblem from the Alabama Crimson Tide. Right. And like, you're like, wait, what? And you're like, yeah, the football team. We think 400 AD, it's from them. And you're like, the school hasn't been founded for 1,500 years. What are you talking about? How could it be them? And it's like,
you have to excuse my friend. He went to school in the Pac-10.
Funny, because it's true.
he doesn't acknowledge the SEC. So roll tide.
Yeah, so like it could not have been the Jews that built the pyramids. Again, predates Jewishness. The artifacts don't go along with it. In fact, these are native Egyptians. And by the way, they're also not slaves. We know that for a few reasons. One, we know they are skilled workers. I'll get into that in a second. But we actually have written documents on papyrus that talk about the crews that built the pyramids, the ones that, you know, cut the blocks and moved the blocks in place. And those workers
ranged.
My father
was a rock splitter. His father was a rock splitter.
Well, these crews, they detail the pay that these crews got. Like, they got paid, like, mainly in actual goods as opposed to money at that point. So they got paid in, like, dates and vegetables and chickens and meat and textiles. But they got paid. They are not slaves. They got housed. They are not slaves, you know? They are actually skilled workers. And, in fact, the process of cutting these blocks, shaping these blocks, and then moving these blocks is a highly skilled process. You might say it would be akin to, you know, building skyscrapers nowadays. Despite what stereotypes might tell you, you can't just pick up somebody from like a Home Depot parking lot and have them build your skyscraper. You need to have guys who know how to do good welding and structural engineering and stuff like that, and like a foreman who's guiding everybody. So it's a highly paid, highly skilled crew that ends up doing that work. The same thing is true of pyramids.
Let's just say that it was a highly skilled slave crew, right?
Yeah.
Their heart's just also not going to be in it. I feel like there's going to be a real morale problem down at the job site. I don't think that product is going to stand the test of time, but you get, again, Bob Vila craftsmen.
Yeah. Yeah, these were skilled craftsmen, and, you know, we found their remains. We found their remains of the actual crew members before, and what do we see? We see broken bones that have been mended. That type of healthcare was only available to higher-class people back in the day. You certainly wouldn't get it as a slave. If you broke your leg as a slave in ancient Egypt, you just fucking got thrown in the Nile. You were done. Nobody's going to sit around and nurse you back to health for 3 months while you get better and better, and, by the way, get an expert to come in and set the bone and everything.
Oh, I get to go I broke my leg. Now I get to go swimming in the Nile. Awesome. Thanks, Bobby.
These are clearly people who had some level of status and prestige, and because their skills were valuable, a pretty far cry from slaves.
I had also heard that this project was something of national importance.
Yeah. These are tombs, right? So the pyramids of Giza are essentially big giant tombs for the rulers. Their idea is that this would be part of their glory in the afterlife. And they were being built to show off the magnificence of this great civilization at the time, and the abundance and the ability and the power. And, you know, we talked a little bit about this with things like the Nazca lines. Like, why would you put so much effort into things like this? Well, because you bring your neighboring groups, and they might not be your enemies all the time, but sometimes, you know, neighbors become enemies at some point in history. That's just a rule. And so you bring your neighbors over every once in a while. You go, hey, you know, just come on over to my kingdom. Look at this. And when you see something the size of the Pyramid of Giza, that's so awe-inspiring that you're like, okay, well, these people clearly have their shit together. Let's attack south. Like, we don't need to attack these guys. Let's go the other way if we want to start tearing people up, because these dudes built fucking giant structures clearly they got their shit together. This is a power symbol. It's also obviously a religious symbol towards their leaders in the afterlife. And there's probably some stuff that we don't understand currently in the modern day about that, including like the participation of individual workers on that might have guaranteed them a spot in some kind of afterlife. But regardless, clearly these are large, gigantic civil works projects that involve very accurate and astute engineering, really skilled labor, skilled craftsmanship, skilled tool working, the use of bronze tools to cut and shape the stone. All of it is just a massive project. But like one dude saw them and then wrote like, yeah, the Jews wrote this. The Jews built this and they were slaves in the Bible. And like that has become the myth. Like basically we have gaslit ancient Egyptian craftsmen for the past 2,500 years.
This is the first, perhaps the first recorded anti-Semitic conspiracy theory. Like, the Jews built the pyramids. The Jews built them. When they did it, they didn't build them as skilled craftsmen. The Jews and their skilled craftsmen and their expert carpentry and stone cutting built the pyramids. They were slaves.
Yeah, it's supposedly when the Hebrews are in Exodus and they, they get taken in by Pharaoh and made into slaves and they have to do it. Yeah, so
Charlton Heston's involved somehow.
Yeah. So anyway, so really, really interesting. So why is this important? Like, what is the importance of people knowing this is true? Why did I choose this article if it wasn't a new discovery? One, so people stop asking me that fucking question. And by the way, I just side note, I'm not even really into Egypt. Like everybody, when I was an undergrad, people were like, I got so inspired by Egyptology and stuff. And I'm like, it never clicked a box for me. I was never like, yeah, I got to go learn about those pyramids. I got to go learn about these guys. Like Egypt seemed boring as shit to me as far as archaeology goes. Like middle of the jungle, the Inca shit, hell fucking yeah. Mayans, you better fucking believe it. North American civilizations, you better believe it. I'll spend my entire life studying it. Egyptians, I don't know why, never really fucking rocked the boat for me.
You're not a star fucker. You're not a, like, everybody else is like looking at the prom queen and you're looking at and you're looking at the Rachel Lee Cook nerdy, she's wearing glasses and her hair's up in a ponytail.
That's right, but I know how to transform her. I know the hotness that lies underneath.
Bobby, that's Freddie Prinze Jr. And he's an attractive man.
Hotness lies under that as well. Well, there's a few reasons why I thought I would highlight this. One, I think this is actually a really good article. So go ahead and give it a scan. This is really short. This is not like a scientific article. This is like a live science article. So go ahead and give it a shot. You can read the entire thing in like 8 minutes. You're fine. But on top of that, I think this is one of those cases where the reality is so much more interesting than the fiction. Like the fiction, we have these slaves, these Hebrew slaves, and they build these pyramids, and then they make Pharaoh let them go, blah, 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 blah.
I don't know. The fiction involves killing the firstborn chun. Like, it involves,
yeah,
like,
those
a
are
bunch
the plagues.
Of, a bunch of yeah. curses that a good God sets upon good people, quote unquote.
Well, he's not a good God either, by the way, because in the Bible, if you read it, like, God hardens Pharaoh's heart to make him not want to let the Jews go. So, like, God sits there and makes Pharaoh not let the Jews go and then punishes Pharaoh for not letting the Jews go. It's pretty contradictory if you actually read it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did the air quote. Sorry, it's an audio medium. I should have said air quote. Good God.
But the real story of these incredibly talented mathematicians and engineers and craftspeople and these teams, you know, devoting their lives to this massive project that has stood the test of time for 4,500 years and all of that it means and all of the awe it has inspired over that time throughout the entire world, all of that is a really interesting story that's way more interesting than the slaves or aliens or Atlanteans or any of that. Because it's real. It happened. Like, those are real human beings like you or me in an incredibly primitive environment that were able to do something like unfucking believable, so unbelievable that it caused 4,500 years of myths.
Listen here. I understand if you want to shit on the Bible. That's fine. You want to say that your science, the reality, your Bob Vilath stuff is better than the Bible, rock on. But do not sit here and tell me that it is better than Stargate. It is better than Stargate SG-1. But it is not better than the movie Stargate, which I felt was a flawless explanation for the pyramids.
Okay, first of all, I think that's a low blow because you know I will never, under any circumstances, talk shit against Richard Dean Anderson. So I think you're kind of coming into this fight knowing I can't throw punches back.
Yeah, well, I'm holding Richard Dean Anderson hostage. Take the shot, Bobby.
a question I sometimes get is like, okay, well then if this isn't something like aliens or Atlanteans or super advanced civilizations, then how come these pyramids exist elsewhere? How can we find pyramids in Central America and South America? And why would we find these pyramids other places? And the answer is pretty simple, which is that a pyramid is basically the most simple way to form a large megalithic structure. Like, it uses the least amount of material, pyramidal shape. It's the easiest to engineer. It's kind of just what happens naturally if you try and stack a bunch of rocks up.
Yeah, I think it was the I think it was a meme I saw, and it was, why are there pyramids all over the place? Well, maybe it's just the best fucking way to stack rocks.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, for those people who think, oh yeah, well then how did they get so good at it 4,500 years ago? They weren't good at it at first. In fact, we have examples of collapsed pyramids in Egypt where they just didn't do the math right. They didn't do the engineering right. They didn't put it on good bedrock, and the things collapsed. They didn't build it correctly. What we
all right,
see...
this last time we used Jewish slaves to build a pyramid. No more. We're done.
What we see in Giza is what happens with all human societies, which is the perfection of a certain building style. And they did it very well, but they started off amateurs and they sucked at it.
Do you think the Amish were able to raise a barn on their first try, English? Nay.
There is an associated conspiracy theory I'd like to address that has to do with your buddy that you mentioned earlier, Damien, Joe Rogan, who you constantly stick up for. So,
oh, fuck, no.
Here is, whoa, calm down there. I don't want to get your bro anger on me, dude. Are you gonna recommend I listen to a Joey Diaz stand-up special too, or what? What's going on?
You go, Rogan. I'm Joey Diaz, pussy motherfucker.
There's another associated mythology with it that has to do with the Sphinx, that's been promoted on Joe Rogan's show by pseudoscientist Graham Hancock and a actual scientist, but he's actually a geologist, has no idea what the fuck he's doing, who talks about wear on the Sphinx, indicating that it's 10,000 plus years old. Okay, it's dumb as fuck. The wear he's talking about is indistinguishable from wind wear. It also happens to be along a causeway, so it could actually be water wear as well, but it would just be caused because there was literally a river that was diverted there. It's nonsensical because the Sphinx is actually the quarry site of the Great Pyramids, meaning they cut the blocks away from the Sphinx to make the Great Pyramids, meaning that the Sphinx is by definition younger than the Great Pyramids, whose date we know from everything from the actual dating. There's like actual hieroglyphs on it that tell us who it was built for and when it was built.
Who stole its nose?
Yeah, we have that pretty down. But then on top of that, we have things like thermal luminescence and optical luminescence dating, and all of that stuff matches up, along with things like the ceramics found at the site, et cetera, et cetera. And so it is a complete nonsensical thought to believe the Sphinx is 10,000 plus years old. It is not believed by anybody in academia, anybody seriously who studies this stuff. It is not even considered, you wouldn't even call it a fringe theory. It's just a wrong theory.
I was reading Chariots of Fire, Bobby.
Yeah, Chariots of the Gods, I believe you mean.
Oh, damn it. I got my LARP book wrong.
Yeah, that one, I think he might bring it up as well. He probably does. But and I was listening to a while ago, a few years ago, when Rogan had those nutbags on talking about it. One, their explanations are bullshit. It's just nonsensical. You can tell they're not archaeologists, never have been, never really studied the issue. But the idea that you could claim that something is older than the thing that necessarily has to be older than at it is just crazy. Like, it's just silly, crazy bullshit.
So I know that I've never listened to an episode of Rogan, but I was mocked earlier.
You've listened to all of them.
But then you happen to have mentioned just now, perhaps let it slip,
yeah,
that you were just offhandedly listening to Rogan when Graham Hancock, a man you hate, was on.
Yeah. No, I've listened to a lot of Joe Rogan. I'm not as much as you, and I'm not as much of a fervent defender as you are.
I am to Joe Rogan as you are to Dungeons & Dragons, unless you want to play some D&D, Bobby.
No, I don't find that statement accurate. All right, on to article number two. A fungus among us.
Yeah, it's right next to the pyramid. We talked about it.
That's right. Right. So this is a very interesting article about the proliferation of a very dangerous fungal infectious agent. So the fungus, Candida auris, is a fungal infection that tends to happen to people in hospitals and can be quite lethal. In certain populations of immunocompromised people that we've seen post-COVID, the death rate, get this, can be 2/3. We just had a global pandemic where the death rate was like 0.1 or something. This death rate, 2/3 of the people who catch it in certain circumstances, like post-COVID, die. That's fucking crazy.
What's the vector? Eating ass or something? Like, how is it?
No,
like,
actually, frequently it's hospitals where I would say like less than 10% of ass eating is done.
Bobby, you've clearly never seen Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, I forgot about candy stripers. 30% of ass eating at most.
And it's dropped down to 25% since I stopped candy striping. But
researchers noted this as a problem back in 2015 before it even reached the United States. And it's particularly terrifying for a few reasons. So one is that 2/3 mortality in certain cases thing, which is terrifying. Just think about that for a second. That means 2/3 of the people who catch it. Think if that had been COVID with the COVID infection rates and everything. Think how crazy that would be. But it loves hospital settings. It seems immune to essentially all the antifungals we have hit it with, and we don't have a lot of antifungals. So it seems pretty much immune. It's essentially untouched by even very strong surface cleaners. It is so prevalent and so hard to kill, even with fucking bleach, ammonia, everything, and it sticks around on hard surfaces for so long that hospitals that are fighting this thing, they've kind of given up even trying. They're like, we hit it with the fucking bleach. We hit it with everything. Like, we don't know what to do.
Burn down the hospital. You have to just build a new hospital.
Kind of. They remove all of the furniture and rip out the drywall and start over from the fucking studs.
First off, how is a biological organism immune to bleach? Because I feel like that's something we should be... we stole genes from CRISPR to manipulate things. I feel like we should be making ourselves disease and poison immune with this gene.
I don't really think immunity to bleach would really give us a lot of edge. I don't know that there's a situation where that becomes the thing that we need. Like, there's not a lot of bleach deaths. And they peaked, by the way, in the 90s with dudes trying to make their hair look like Blink-182. After that, there's not a lot of bleach deaths.
Would you be able to, are you like one half immune to cyanide poisoning? Like, are you... Is it just the ammonia that hurts you then?
Mark McGrath from Sugar Ray is responsible for 2/3 of all bleach deaths. Single-handedly. That's what the song Fly Away is about, actually. It's about a bunch of people dying from bleach.
The world's a better place because Sugar Ray fans died. But I mean...
So it was first noticed in 2015 in foreign countries, and it made its way into the U.S. in 2016. There we had 14 people contract it through the entire year of 2016. And the numbers have just been ticking up and ticking up and ticking up. And now we have 1,500 US infections by the end of 2020. And it's just getting propelled by COVID, or has been propelled. Because think about it. COVID has meant way more people in hospitals. Hospitals are essentially, or were essentially, overflowing. So way more people in there. More chance of that fungus getting into hospitals, more chance of it spreading in hospitals. Because it sticks around on stuff so well and so long after so many cleanings, we think it gets transmitted even by on things like doctors' lab coats. Like, a doctor goes and sees one patient. If that fungus gets on them, they can then transfer it to other people. You're talking about immunocompromised people, sometimes by the virus itself, but sometimes by the drugs we give them to fight the virus. And that immunocompromised nature allows that infection to get in where it otherwise might be stopped.
Do you realize what percentage of doctors scratch their nuts in between patients and wipe it on their lab coats?
50.
Because all male doctors do it. And by definition, very few female doctors.
Oh, no, actually, few people don't know this. There's actually more female physicians than males, but it's considered good luck to scratch a dude's balls before you go in to do a checkup.
It's like when a football player in a college program hits the believe sign.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've never seen a female surgeon go into surgery without scratching at least like the surge tech's balls at least once.
Dr. Janet Shoemaker requests that the janitor wait outside the room so she can scratch his balls before going and treating Mrs. Johansson. It's a living.
So COVID has certainly accelerated it, and we actually think that there might be kind of a large secondary pandemic, not of the same type, but more of something that flows through immunocompromised individuals within hospitals that might come back. And researchers actually started looking into this. They reached out to hospitals that were really badly affected by COVID in the very beginning of the pandemic, and they received data back that some of them had seen waves of fungal infections following those COVID outbreaks, not just from Oris, but from other funguses, including ones like aspergillus, which is a similar thing. It's not something that normally affects us, but when we have compromised immune systems, it can. And once it does, it can be quite lethal. So the question comes around, is there cause for concern and what can we do to prevent it? The answer to the first part is yes, there is very much cause for concern. We do not have a lot of antifungal agents. And the reason for that is because fungal infections have not usually been something that has been very devastating to human beings. You usually have to be pretty immunocompromised. And our endothermy, our ability to create heat inside of our bodies, kind of makes us in some ways immune to funguses. Funguses do not like heat. They like to be in like kind of cooler, damper places. So we can get surface funguses, things like athlete's foot or jock itch, semi-surface funguses and mucosal areas,
Bobby,
like yeast infections.
You know I run real hot, and I can tell you, man.
Yeah, you burn away those fungus.
If I don't shower for 2 days, let me tell you, those fungus are not shy about hanging around Mr. Scrotum.
That's right. Yeah. So like on the outside and the semi-inside mucosal areas, you can get some fungal infections, some yeast infections.
I have
infections.
A ton of scrotal mucus, which is weird. Doctors are baffled by it.
Especially when you're sick. Then you get scrotal phlegm. And that's...
Sorry, I got to wipe real fast.
That's why your wife won't let you go anywhere without underwear on, because it just looks like a snail just migrated across the bed.
People would think it's poop, except it's very violently green. Like, violently green. Looks like a baby vomit.
So we haven't spent nearly as much time working on antifungals as we have for antibacterials and antivirals. And because of that, fungals can be a problem when they actually do hit hard. The other thing is, we didn't used to be able to keep immunocompromised people alive. It used to be that if your immune system was compromised, your fucking ass was dead. So the ability to keep them alive with hospitals and drugs, et cetera, has given fungi, a place to infect people and adapt to their environment, which means likely we will soon be getting more and more fungal infections that can infect humans, even those that maybe aren't immunocompromised. We saw this in terms of COVID mutation with a lot of those mutations like B117 that came out of immunocompromised individuals. So that's pretty scary. But there's another scary element to it, which is climate change. Funguses tend to want to live in specific climates where they do really well. There, they can infect people and cause problems. We've talked about one of those problems, one of the rare fungal infection problems, on this very show, and it happens here in San Diego, and it's called valley fever. And it comes from literally a fungus that just lives down in the soil. And when the soil gets disturbed or brought up, you breathe it in and it can seriously infect your lungs and it can fuck you up. It can kill you. I've known people who've been like, you know, in the ICU for weeks because they got valley fever. But the deal is...
Valley girl fever right about the time Clueless came out. Know what you're talking about.
That's true. That's when you had your crush on Paul Rudd. Man has an age today.
Yeah, like that ended. Didn't get more intense every day till now.
And it should. I mean, he's a national sweetheart. But that valley fever, that fungus that can be quite deadly, if you grew up in an area that valley fever is in, which is only really the Southwest United States here, if you grew up in that area playing in the dirt, you got exposed to it, and then you're pretty much immune to it for life. Well, the problem is, as climate is warming, valley fever is getting further and further north. And so we had a couple of cases of valley fever in Washington State last year, meaning that this is getting so far north, it's getting up there. Now think about what this problem entails. If you grew up in an area with valley fever, you're unlikely to get it. But if the area in which valley fever changes and gets much broader, and now all of a sudden you can get it all the way up to Washington State, none of those people grew up with valley fever. So now we have an endemic thing growing in the soil that can infect 100% of people, except as opposed to here, where it can just affect, you know, like tourists and people who didn't grow up here, et cetera, et cetera. So there is cause for concern, not only for bacterial infections to be acquired in hospitals like Oris, that's very, very lethal. The soil bacterial infections that like the ones that cause valley fever, which are also very, very lethal and are now able to expand out of their range. So not much you personally can do about this, but it's something to be aware of. And it's certainly something we have to put on our research docket, including developing new antifungals and antifungal treatments.
So if we're going to share our valley fever with the Pacific Northwest, they can share their grunge scene with us. They can share their coffees with us.
Oh, yeah, because they're known for not allowing Seattle area coffee outside of the general vicinity, aren't
there? You could only find a Starbucks in Washington State. I'm going to say it now.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 562, where you learned all about who built the pyramids and a fungus among us. Come on back next week for Science Faction 563.
Can we all just agree it wasn't the fucking Italians who built the pyramids?
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.